When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Hockey at the Rock. We're excited to be here. We're excited to be in the postseason. Things have wrapped up. The dust has settled, and now we have the full picture of the NHL playoffs, and we are thrilled to have that for the first time in the history of the franchise of this podcast, but also the first time in many of the Young Devils' careers. And let's just briefly recap how the Young Devils arrived here. And to help me do that, my name is Dan Rozelle, by the way. I'm joined by John Fisher. Good morning, John.
Good morning to the third place overall New Jersey Devils.
What a season. And this season, they have set the franchise record for wins in a season. They've set the franchise record for points in a season?
Yes, they have, right?
Yep. Yeah, they set the record in the NHL for biggest turnaround in an 82-game season, points-wise, that is. They have the second goalie not named the first goalie not named Martin Brodeur in franchise history to win 30 games a single season. They have the first defenseman in, franchise history to tie the defenseman's scoring record for a single season. They have the single-season points record for New Jersey Devils with Jack Hughes. A lot of amazing things happened this season. This was one that I don't think many of us will forget for a very long time. Just no matter how it ends, the excitement of the regular season, some of the more memorable comebacks, I think one theme that I would appreciate the most about this year and one that I hope will serve them in the playoffs well is resilience, John. And I want to start there. This team, unlike the teams the last, 5 to 10 years, they would wilt the second any sort of adversity happened. And these Devils, they did not do that. They had every reason to wilt early on in the season when they hit a losing stride after winning many games in a row. They had reasons to wilt in games when they were down a bunch on the road, at home, so on and so forth. But this team made almost every single game close. They made almost every single game exciting. And they really, really, really never gave up.
No, and it's a massive, massive, massive turnaround from last season. Last season was literally one of the worst seasons in franchise history. It wasn't a simple case of Murphy's Law. It was a simple case of the team was just not good. They had awful goaltending. They had, as you said, an awful mentality. And all signs pointed to something big's got to change here. And it turned out everything that could get better did get better and got better in ways that nobody would have ever predicted. I mean, could we really sit here, Dan, and say that Dawson Mercer was a game away from tying Wayne Gretzky in something?
Yeah, crazy. Like,
that's the level of ridiculousness that has happened this season. And the
Do
good
we
times
expect him
did
to
not
have 27 goals.
No, and nobody
crazy.
nobody expected Dougie Hamilton to tie Barry Beck's 22 goals in a season and come a couple points short of Scott Stevens's record of 78 points in a season, of which Hamilton's the second defenseman ever in franchise history to drop 70 points in a season. As mentioned, Jack Hughes set the franchise record and did it faster than Patrick Eliash, which is mind-boggling when you consider the guy missed a handful of games and had a cold snap. He could have been the team's first ever triple digit point scorer.
He probably will be.
On top of that, Dan, you got decent goaltending from Vanecek. You found good money in Akira Schmid. And, John Marino was a massive upgrade. Damon Severson has been perfect in a more limited role. You've gotten all sorts of help. Even Eric Halla has gotten hot, Dan. Did you know that he ended this season with 6 goals?
And not to disparage Eric Halla, but again, he was solid most of the season in terms of how he drove play, how he won faceoffs, how he killed penalties. He's clearly a strong locker room presence, and I don't care what narrative Nesson tries to push online. The Devils don't really care. Good for both the Devils and the Bruins, who had their franchises' respective most successful seasons. I don't know why anyone's relitigating this trade when it worked extremely well for both sides, honestly.
There are many reasons
that those people couldn't succeed in those places, and they found new life and new roles. Like, let's move on here. But that being said, really cool to see Holla stick with it. And again, I think he shows this theme of resilience more than a lot of other players do, in the sense of he had every reason to just give up on this year. His shooting percentage was something under 2%.
He was missing empty nets left and right. And then
nothing. Anything that could have looked like a goal for anyone else felt like a sure miss for Holla. And then he found his stride when it mattered. And again, he stuck with it over and over. Clearly, he never lost the other players in the room, never lost the players on his line. It was just something that he found ways to be useful even when the puck wasn't going in, which is not something I can say for a lot of the other players that the Devils had had over the last 5 years.
Exactly. And with that being said, Dan, let's go back over the past five games that closes out this season, because we have a playoff series to talk about, a very notorious one. Yes. And it turned out that it took all 82 games to figure out who that it would indeed be our hated rivals as the first round opponent.
And it looked like that somewhere around, I don't know, mid-January, that was trending in that direction. But we didn't know for sure until the final day, which is exciting to say the least, because when's the last time the Devils were even remotely involved in a division chase?
Carolina made it quote unquote interesting by dropping a couple games where they could have clinched it. They could have clinched it. And then whoops, they lost 3-2 to Detroit. Whoops, they lost 4-0 to Tampa Bay. Whoops, they lost 3-0 to Nashville. It's like all of a sudden the door was open up until, again, the final game of the season between both teams, which is wonderful. But first, the Devils had to ruin Pittsburgh. Shortly after getting destroyed by Winnipeg, the Devils had a massive bounce back. Huge bounce back, Dan, against a Penguins team that should have been way more desperate. Instead, they came out sloppy and I guess put all their points into trying to body up the Devils. Mm-hmm. Massive fail. Dougie Hamilton opens the scoring. Dawson Mercer goes to the net three times for three goals. The dog gets his hat trick. Meyer puts in a power play goal, a 5-on-3 goal nonetheless.
Yep.
And, you know, Brian Rust tips in a Pierre-Oliver Joseph shot to deny Vanecek the shutout. But this was full-on domination by the Devils against a team that really should have been better than this. And it's a big reason why the Penguins have, it's a big reason why the Penguins are missing the playoffs for the first time in 16 seasons. I mean,
I think the biggest reason is losing at home to Chicago with two games to play.
On fan appreciation night.
On fan appreciation
After the Islanders lost, and a win would have put them in the driver's seat for the playoffs.
And listen, we can mock them now, but it's 16 years and three cups later. Like, this was a very, very extremely successful run that was undone by the fact that they were so close to the playoffs even still speaks to the sheer volume of talent they had, because pretty much every decision that the now fired Ron Hextall made was wrong and terrible. Yes. And despite him, they almost made the playoffs through every year of his tenure. So it's an impressive run from Pittsburgh. But again, you know, 16 years is 16 years. There's a lot of fatigue there as well. They get a summer off this time, and the Devils helped contribute to that. And that was kind of the reason I was hoping to see them in the playoffs, actually, because I knew the Devils matched up pretty comfortably against them. No game against Pittsburgh this year looked particularly difficult for the Devils. It just looked like the Penguins did not have anywhere near the speed needed to track the Devils, to catch up with them in important times. It just was really, really not close. But the next game after Pittsburgh was just as not close. I had the pleasure of attending half of this one. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it through for health reasons for the entire game. But I did get to see the game comfortably put away in the second period, which just goes to speak volumes, because at that point when I left, they had scored only half the goals that they would score that day.
Yeah, so the Devils played Columbus. Now, again, we've said this before, the Devils have had all kinds of heartbreak and beatings and messy games against Columbus for the better part of a decade. Mm-hmm. So to personally witness an 8-1 beating, an 8-1 beating, Dan, was
sick.
Wonderfully cathartic. This was somehow a bigger blowout than the Mischief Night Madness earlier this season, where they won 7-1. the highlights, you got Jack Hughes opening the scoring on a beautiful goal. Mm-hmm. You got Tomáš Tatar scoring a legitimate goal because he had a goal disallowed. He was offside on his own play. Jack Hughes tic-tac-toeing in a power play goal. And then Jonah Lotto scored a controversial goal where Corrali ran into Vanacek, but Vanacek recovered enough for Lotto to jam the puck in through his personal area. Yeah. And the goal stood upon review, but Vanacek was healthy, and that was the bigger thing. Devils challenged it, failed the challenge, killed the penalty because Columbus's power play was absolutely terrible. And then Meyer scored another power play goal off a sweet dish from the big deal to make it 4-1. And then, Dan, the third period, oh my goodness, Dan. Erik Haula, the aforementioned Erik Haula, torched Michael Hutchinson so bad that the coach said, I'm going to put in John Gillis. Former New Jersey Devils goalie, John Gillis. Dan, on the first four shots, Timo Meier scored on the first shot Gillis faced. Damon Severson scored on the second, which was a shorthanded rush where he joined the play. Mm-hmm. Then he robs Jack Hughes of what would have been, you know, the record-breaking point on a brilliant post-to-post glove save. And then it gets torched by Ryan Graves. That's three goals allowed on four shots.
Yeah.
8-1.
It's this classic John Gillies.
Yeah, and it could have been worse. There were posts hit. There was a goal taken away. This could have been a double-digit game.
I mean, Devils are basically playing an exhibition because at this point, Columbus is putting guys out there who they want to basically see what they have in them from a prospect perspective. The Columbus has been playing for nothing for a pretty long time. But I hope Johnny Gaudreau's enjoying his peaceful life there.
Well, he actually left the game very early because he was apparently sick, and I wouldn't blame him. His team was sick out there. And there was a bit of controversy in the third period where some jabroni named Billy Sweezy, that sounds like a made-up name, he decided to try to cross-check Nico Hischier about 11 times through the back of his shoulder blades. This led to a big brawl where Kevin Ball grabbed Marcus Bjork and Sweezy. Hischier got a roughing call against Sweezy. There was a whole bunch of penalties. Devils ended up with the power play, I believe, out of this. Mm-hmm. But the Devils did not punish. It is what it is. Most importantly, the captain was fine, which was very good because he would keep going on to do good things. Yep. Unfortunately, the next game after the Columbus game, one of the worst teams in the hockey, the Devils went to the building where nobody wins other than the home team, the Boston Bruins.
They were right there all game long. That's the problem. This was a tight game.
And it, okay.
Playoff feel for sure. Let's start there. It looked like every mistake would be punished if there were any made, and there were very few made, and the goalies were on point, and really the teams after the first period, Blackwood is like, he kind of feels like the Severson of goalies at this point, because he can have a game where he's mostly pretty good, and then he's just, the lapses are just so bad that they lose the game for the Devils, but I guess Severson's done that less, but man.
Well, Severson is way more consistently good than Blackwood has ever.
Oh, well, yeah, sure, sure. But the catastrophic errors this game was on, I think it was like the first two goals, they should not, I mean, the only two goals. The second one shouldn't go in.
Okay, so let's walk it back first. First and foremost, starting Mackenzie Blackwood in this game was a choice, but I guess the logic was nobody wins in Boston. So why not?
Might as well get him some reps.
And also, this game was on ABC, so you're giving Mackenzie Blackwood also to a national television audience. But whatever, the Devils clearly did not care about that, and nor they should. Mm-hmm. They're not here for the broadcasting people. Anyway, Devils were absolutely torched in the first period. They conceded 22 shots on net. There have been nearly entire games where they've allowed 22 shots on net, Dan. So to allow it in one period... we'll tell you exactly who is the superior team, as Boston basically out-deviled the Devils. Like, the Bruins just look frighteningly fast on everything, frighteningly aggressive on every puck, and just kept peppering it in. It looked like it was going to be a real ugly game because Blackwood gave up two goals in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Ryan Graves held up Brad Marchand on a play that he didn't need to. So on the resulting power play, Zacha tips in a long shot from Hampus Lindholm. That was the goal that you're not mad about. It's a tip-in. What are you going to do about it, Dan?
Yeah.
Be mad at Graves for taking the penalty. Oh, but the second goal. Shortly after the Devils came close to tying it up, David Pastrnak rushes up ice with Pavel Zacha. Pasternak misses the net by about 5 feet, and Blackwood, I guess, decided, I need to go 5 feet to my right because it's David Pasternak. And yeah. So he was completely out of position for when the puck bounced off the end boards and Zacha had an empty net to slide the puck in, of which he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sort of play where it's like, why, how were you this out of position? How did you get out of this out of position? This is not some young rookie goaltender, Dan. This is somebody who's been in the league now.
Yeah.
He's 26. He's been, yeah, he only has 152 career games due to injuries and other situations, but he's been a pro for, you know, he's been an NHL pro for the better part of five seasons. How do you, how, Dan? How?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway, shortly thereafter, Jack Hughes sets up Jesper Bratt for one of the sickest goals that you'll see this season, where Hughes played Bratt in one-on-one with Linus Ullmark, the presumptive Vezina champion, and beats him on a shootout-like move to make it 2-1. And then it was all about the goalies up until about late in the third period.
Yeah.
The Devils had power plays, but the penalty kill of Boston was just too good. The Devils tried their best, but Boston was just too good. And even when they did break through Boston, Ullmark was just too good. This was basically the classic. You learned why this team has 65 wins this season. They didn't have 65 wins at the time, but they got there.
It was kind of like the other Devils games against Boston where, you know, they do end up on the bottom, but man, they are right there with them the entire time.
Yeah, to his credit, Blackwood played way better after the Zacha goal, the second Zacha goal.
So naturally, it looks like a team that'll lose to the Rangers in five, as everyone's saying online, of course, right? Saying that. So
those people don't matter, Dan. Anyway,
that's fine with me. But that was as good a sign as any that these Devils know the difference between playoff hockey and the 8-1 exhibition that they played against
Columbus. Oh yeah, absolutely. Boston was a reminder of, you know, when you're playing good teams, it's a vastly different situation.
But they didn't look out of sorts. They didn't look like they were chasing the play. They were a couple bounces in either direction from the game going in a different way. And so that's something you really, really like to see in terms of preparedness for the playoffs. And something else you like to see is for the team to finish really, really strong. And that is something they were able to do. I think it did help that they were still in the playoff race, not the playoff race, but the division race, until the final day of the season. So they had something to play for, but also they're chasing internal history. They're chasing individual marks. I think those are good enough motivators when you know you've accomplished the big team goals that you had at the beginning of the season so far. So really they ended strong. They ended impressively, but it wasn't glamorous to get there.
Well, it looked better than it ended better than how it looked at times. Yes. I will say before we cap the Boston game, there was, of course, a bit of controversy because, of course, do you know who plays for Boston, Dan?
Marchand.
I like to call him Exhibit 63 in the future concussion lawsuits the NHL is going to have to sort out in the future.
Well, the class action from the seven guys that sue him for it.
Right. Anyway, Mr. Marchand decided in the third period, I'm going to throw a shoulder check against Michael McLeod. Now, that is legal, Dan. Shoulder checks are legal. He hit McLeod initially in the shoulder. Also legal. Then Marchand continued the hit to shoulder him in the square of his jaw, which is not legal. That's actually against Rule 48. That's actually why Rule 48 was created. It doesn't matter if your principal point of contact is the head. You cannot throw a headshot. And not only did Marchand not get called, not only did he not get suspended, even though it literally knocked McLeod out of the game and the final two games of the season, but you got the insult of the ABC/ESPN rules expert Dave Jackson saying, well, you know, McLeod needed to try to avoid the hit.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's the reason why I say there's going to be future legal troubles with the NHL, because the literal mindset in hockey, and this is true in a lot of things too, but it's definitely true in hockey where you're blaming the victim of the headshot. This isn't a matter of, oh, McLeod put his head down and wasn't paying attention. Like, no, Marchand intentionally tried to hit him in the head and did so. And you can see that in slow-mo. You can see that in real speed. Mm-hmm. And yet we got the quote-unquote rules expert putting the onus on McLeod, not knowing that, you know, not assuming that Marchand was going to headshot him. Maybe anytime you play Marchand, you just have to assume he's going to throw something dirty at you. But whatever, he said something nice on the internet. So Reddit loves him. Internet people love him because they're fickle. We move on.
Mm-hmm.
We move on to Buffalo.
Yeah, we move on to Buffalo as this was another game that was ripe for excitement. This was two high scoring teams, and Buffalo on Buffalo's end, you know, they're a team that everyone is looking at now to be the next, I guess we can say the next Devils in the sense of potent offense, but the defensive lapses really buried them this year, and they just couldn't put it all together in time. Two bad streaks kind of knocked them out of the playoffs, but they were knocking on the door for sure. And by the time this game was played, they were still in the playoff picture. They could still mathematically get in, and it looked like they were winning every game with Devin Levy in goal. Now, David also played the night before at MSG and won. And so, you know, this was something where it looked kind of schedule favorable for the Devils, and indeed it was, because you can have a high scoring team, but eventually you're going to have to play some defense against good teams that can play defense, or you'll just get outgunned. That's what happened with the Devils and Sabres, I think, a couple times this year as well.
Exactly. And to be fair, you know, you could definitely get the sense that Buffalo knew full well that their lives were on the line here. Yeah. Like, normally in the second game of a back-to-back, especially one that went to overtime, the other team's going to look a little sloppy at first, or they look good at first, but then over time they start looking, you know, tired and whatnot. No, Buffalo kept up the pace up until, I would say, the final 5 minutes of the game. Like, they really pressed on the Devils hard. They, you know, tried to almost sold out completely on penalty kills just for shorthanded goals. They did whatever they could to try to, like, get on the scoreboard, get in the game, get moving. So full credit to Vitek Vanacek. He had a really strong game. Credit to the Devils for taking some punches, so to speak, but not getting knocked out. They did get some favorable bounces. Like, for example, Miles Wood managed to have maybe one of his best games of the entire season in this one. He throws a puck on net, and it hits off, and then Jesper Boqvist takes the rebound, throws it to the front of the net. It bounces off Henry Jokiharju and goes past Levy for an early 1-0 lead. And then Jonas Siegenthaler adds to the pressure by dropping a banger off the post early in the second period to really put Buffalo on the skids at 2-0. Jeff Skinner gives Buffalo some life shortly after Buffalo gets a goal taken off the board for an offside challenge that the Devils won, but nobody covered Skinner in front of the net. It was a total defensive breakdown. So Mittelstadt fed Skinner for what looked like in pretty much a layup. And then Miles Wood piled in a rebound from a Nathan Bastian shot, appears. And again, Wood scored his first goal in 15 games to restore the 2-goal lead. And then from then on, it's you still had that sense of, like, if Buffalo just gets one back, oh my goodness, it's going to be a real nightmare. But then Tomas Tatar scored in the third period, and you know, it's 4-1. Yeah. Matthias Samuelsson, you know, converts on a play where it really should have stopped because Tage Thompson threw off Siegenthaler's helmet. And by rule, if you lose your helmet, you have to go to the bench. Yeah. So Samuelsson, that explained why Samuelsson was wide open on the weak side. I didn't realize that live until I remembered, wait a minute, that helmet that got pulled off, that was not an accident. How come Tage didn't get a penalty for that? That's, like, wrong. It was 4-2. Devils get the empty net. Tatar puts it in to ice the game. And then Brat hustles. Buffalo decides to pull the goalie a second time. Brat hustles like crazy to deny an icing, finds Jack Hughes for a goal. That's Jack Hughes's 97th point of the season. Hughes was robbed in this game. Brat was robbed in this game. Meyer was robbed in this game. Like, Devin Levy put off some amazing stops.
If they had him most of the season, I feel fine. Like, yeah, they're probably closer than 1 point away. They're probably maybe even higher up in the standings. But man, oh man, it really felt like Hughes wasn't going to break the record this day.
No, it wasn't. And to be fair, you know, it wasn't like Hughes had a bad game per se. It was just like it just wasn't going.
Like last year.
But again, that's all this game showed. One of the major differences between last season and this season is that the Devils actually have depth scoring. Okay, Hughes isn't scoring. Cool. Tomas Tatar can get you 2 goals. Miles Wood can score his first goal in over a month. Jonas Siegenthaler can add a banger. You know, all of a sudden, hey, that's 3 goals right there. You get a bounce off for Boqvist. Hey, that's 4 goals. Hey, you know, like, you know, you can pull away when your top guys aren't, you know, creating plays that get finished or finishing them entirely. And again, full credit to the Devils for, yeah, they took some punches. They lost the run of play. But again, Buffalo was playing for their playoff lives, and the Devils acquitted themselves fairly decently to, you know, kill the penalties, the 2 penalties that they had. and try their best not to give up the big ones and try to help out Vanacek as much as possible, which they did. So, and with that result, Dan, the Devils not only knocked out the Buffalo Sabres, because Buffalo was in a you must win or you go home situation, mm-hmm. but they also clinched home ice because
yep.
Buffalo beat our hated rivals in overtime the night prior, which meant 1 point would have secured home ice in the first round, and the Devils got two. So there you go. Good job, Buffalo. We'll see if you get better.
Yeah.
We'll see if you decide to have a goaltender other than Devon Levy that's not like 40-something years old like Craig Anderson. Anyway. And so
going into the final game, the stakes were thus. I mean, the Devils couldn't do much except win to influence their position right. In the Metropolitan Division, but there was a lot that could potentially change due to Pittsburgh, the aforementioned Pittsburgh blowing it against Chicago. It became pretty clear which teams would get in, the Islanders only needing 1 point in their final two games to do so.
And they
got it immediately. They were playing against Montreal, who, again, nothing to play for. The stakes were completely low. And then in terms of seeding, the Panthers were playing the Hurricanes. And so if the Panthers had won while the Devils had won in any fashion, or the Devils got a point while the Hurricanes didn't in any fashion, the Devils would have won the Metropolitan Division. And early on, it did not look so good for those prospects. It very quickly became 3-0 Washington in the first period and 2-0 Carolina in that game.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina went into Florida with a purpose, and, you know, that's what Carolina has done all season long. I mean, they're not a bunch of scrubs. I mean, they won as many games as the Devils did. They know how to handle businesses in tough situations, and they went in against Florida, a team that they could have been facing in the first round. Actually, no, I take it back.
They're going to play Florida, yeah. It was only Florida or the Rangers. Those are the only two options.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, because the Islanders won. Okay. I can math. I just realized the Islanders also had the edge in regulation overtime wins. That was the other tiebreaker that favored that.
It was setup. Either Panthers won themselves into the first wild card or they get lost and got the second. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, in any case, but Carolina took care of business and the Devils came out really sloppy. You know, Darcy Kemper made some tough stops. And then, of course, Joe Snively torches Blackwood on a 2-on-1 after a Jack Hughes turnover. Rasmus Sundin buries a puck. And then Craig Smith. Oh, goodness. Jack Hughes had a terrible turnover to Craig Smith. Absolutely terrible. And then, of course, Blackwood made himself small for the play and got torched. So yeah, three goals allowed within just about the first 10 minutes. And you're thinking, okay, this is good thing Carolina's winning, because otherwise I'd be really mad about this result.
Yes.
But Mr. Halla did something historical by beating Kemper with a slap shot. Two things happened with that goal, Dan. Name them.
The man refused to die. First of all, two things happened with that goal.
Two historical things happened with that goal.
Good question. Did the Devils get something about 20 goal scorers or know. Okay. I genuinely have no idea what you're talking about. Okay.
First and foremost, that goal guaranteed that the Devils would not be shut out. And for the second time in franchise history, the Devils have played an entire season without being shut out.
And sadly, they're not the only team to do that this year.
No, Toronto also did that this year. Anyway,
yeah.
The second historical fact is that the secondary assist for this goal came from Hughes, Jack Hughes, for Luke Hughes, as Michigan was knocked out of the Frozen Four. He signed his entry-level contract in Boston. He did not play in the Boston game. He made his NHL debut in the Buffalo game, and the Devils went 11-7, and Luke Hughes, he didn't really do too much. He pretty much
made his debut without incident or note.
Yeah, exactly. he played. It was fine. It's whatever.
The next one was more exciting.
In this game, he got to open it up a little bit, and you got to see some reasons why you should be excited about Luke Hughes. Anyway, but he gets his first NHL point on Halla's goal. So that's the other historical fact. So there you go. So now the Devils have a little life, and that life goes away when Tom Wilson bangs in a rebound up in front of Blackwood's biz. Basically, as Bryce Salvador correctly explained on the broadcast, that the issue was that two forwards decided they didn't know who to take. They focused on Strome instead of Jensen, so Jensen was wide open to find Tom Wilson down low with Kevin Ball. It's a 2-on-1 against Ball down low, and you know Wilson's in front of Ball, and no matter how big Kevin Ball is, you're not moving Tom Wilson, and Tom Wilson fishes it in. So Blackwood gives up his fourth goal on his 11th shot against, gets pulled for Akira Schmid as Vanecek got the night off. And Dan, Akira Schmid.
Yeah, proved, locked it down.
Should be the second goaltender on this team.
Yes.
Not Mackenzie Blackwood.
There's no question at this point. At this point, if you're looking at raw numbers, I mean,
pure stats.
This game was as emblematic of the case that Devils fans have been making all season long, but I hope that people understand why it has occurred this way. They're stuck. They're stuck with this situation. The problem is that Blackwood is on an NHL contract and would have to go through waivers to be down in the AHL, whereas Akira Schmid would not. It's an easy paper decision to keep Blackwood up most of the year, and when he was hurt, it was great that Schmid was up here providing backup, but this game... At this point, it's the playoffs. You can't afford to be making decisions based on that anymore. You want to win games. And Akira Schmid, no question, gives the Devils a better chance to win games. In fact, he came in, the game completely shifted. If you pull a goalie for a momentum shift, this is as representative of that shift as you can possibly get. And this isn't even the first time this happened this season. I think it happened against Ottawa also, where Schmid came in.
Vanecek got hurt.
Yep. Schmid came in, locked the game down, and really just looked poised. I mean, the thing about Schmid is that whether he's giving up goals, whether he is, you know, saving everything, he never really looks out of place. He never really looks like he's scrambling to get to anything. He looks like he's pretty dialed in the entire time, and that reassurance allows the Devils to play a little more freely, knowing that every mistake isn't going in the back of their net. And so once they got the ability to kind of refine their identity, they very quickly reestablished the kind of team they are. And this was happening against the backdrop of, you know, the Devils were at 4-1, but now Florida's starting to catch up also to the Hurricanes. They scored two quick goals to tie that game.
Right. And the Devils started playing a lot smarter. Jack Hughes was less of a turnover machine. Everybody was, I think sharper. I think that first period was just a classic, everybody's just not having a good game type of period. But the second period, the Devils were able to, I guess, get their minds right, so to speak. The play started happening more. Kemper's getting challenged more. Fortunately, looking at the beef here, so there was after a surprising rare, and I do mean rare, broken stick penalty or illegal equipment penalty on Curtis Lazar, where Lazar lost his stick, Rasmus Sundin dropped his stick.
Yeah.
Lazar so picks up Sandin's stick. Sandin decides, I'm going to horse collar tackle Lazar. And then a beef happened. But anyway, later, a little later, John Carlson was alleged to have cleared a puck over the glass. And the first power play unit came on and did nothing. The second power play unit came on and established some presence. And what's this? Thomas Tatar takes a shot. Miles Wood is in front and he tips a puck in. Miles Wood has scored in consecutive games.
Wow.
His second power play goal of the season. It's 4-2. And you're thinking, okay, the Devils have clawed another back. If they can get one shortly thereafter, they're in the game. And then Eric Hallis scores maybe the luckiest goal of the season, for him at least, where Hughes plays it up to Brat. Brat springs Hallis for a 1-on-1. Hallis gets horribly hooked from behind. Would have drawn a penalty, maybe even a penalty shot, Dan. But Kemper and Hala both Hala turned to his right after the foul. Kemper went to his left. The puck was left alone and slid into the net.
Yep.
A shotless goal, Dan. Shotless goal. 4-3.
Yeah.
Now the Devils are just a shot away. And who would provide the shot, Dan? An absolute of a slap shot from Dougie Hamilton to tie Barry Beck right through the legs.
He's done so many times, by the way, this season.
He creamed the bottom of the net. Like, he hit it off the frame, through the legs, off the back of the frame, and through Kemper's legs. That's how hard he hit it. Like, he hit that. He couldn't have hit that shot any harder, even if he tried. 4-4, Dan. The Devils have made a 3-goal comeback. And now you're thinking, are they going to win it? They're pushing. They came close, Dan. They came pretty close to making it 5-4 in regulation. But
both games are tied now.
Both games are tied, and then it wasn't Carolina.
No, yeah,
dropped
it
the
ended up
hammer.
not mattering because the Hurricanes then came back and scored two more goals in about 20 seconds, and very quickly put any sort of doubts to rest, except for the fact that it was 5-2 with an empty net for Carolina, and then it was 5-3, and then eventually the game ended 5-3, and then the Carolina Hurricanes won the division. But the Devils were still out there going for the franchise wins record. They're still going out there for individual records.
You claw back from three goals.
For.
You claw back from three goals down. You might as well win the game.
Finish the job, and they go to overtime. And I don't think you could dream up a first NHL goal better than this, assisted by your captain and your brother. But Luke Hughes drags through the Washington offensive zone, skates around one Putin supporting Alex Ovechkin, and after an initial shot, and Stromme takes an initial shot that trickles through Kemper but slides wide of the net. Hughes picks it up, and as the Devils have been so adept at this season, especially after acquiring Timo Meier, a wraparound goal seals the deal, and Luke Hughes rushes to the bench, completely ignores his brother in the process, and celebrates with the team, picking up his first NHL goal. Is his first overtime goal. It's a game-winning goal. I think the Devils have not had someone score their first goal as an overtime game winner since Yegor Sharangovich back in 2017, I want to say, or 2018?
No, 2021. It was in that short pandemic shortened season. It was in front of nobody.
Gotcha.
Against
Boston. Okay. Yes, I knew it was against Boston. It was very early on in that pandemic shortened season too.
Yeah. Nevertheless,
great goal, great game. What a comeback! And you'd like to see them not have first periods like they did, because against a better team than Washington that's playing for nothing, they will not be able to make that kind of comeback. But man, oh man, is it good to see that they're able to assert their authority and make that kind of thing happen. Interesting decisions now to be made about the lineup, given the way that Luke Hughes has played, given the way Kevin Ball has played. I mean, you have a lot of options here and a lot to think about when you're crafting the roster that will take on the New York Rangers. So, John, the Devils finish with 52 wins. They finish with, 112 points? Is that what it was?
112 points, another franchise record.
112 points, and now they will be seeing our hated rivals in the first round. Let's talk about this series. There is a clear theme being set up here. It's Devils depth versus Rangers experience and goaltending. I think that's the simplest way to put this series in layman's terms.
Well, I think I would also add the Devils have beaten the Rangers 3 out of 4 times this season.
Well, sure, but I always look at that and say, you know, in the last time the Devils made the playoffs, they had beaten Tampa 3 times that season too, and it didn't matter at all. So
but the Devils were 8th seed and Tampa was the number 1 seed. Like,
oh, sure, but we've seen plenty of cases where, like, I mean, let's talk Columbus Tampa if you want. Like, right, you fine. Know, we've seen plenty of cases where the regular season results, I tend to put less stock in them in general since that series, definitely, because they just look completely outmatched the entire time regardless. But, and I know that's not as likely to happen this time, but I don't want to put too much stock in previous results, because those games were close. The Devils played the Rangers.
All of them were close. Yeah.
Pretty close. Yeah. Each time it was exciting. It was hotly contested. There's a clear bad blood trend happening that we all love to see. But I do think that a lot of it boils down to those dimensions that I mentioned. The Rangers clearly have superior goaltending. They have more players who have been in a playoff environment before playing playoff hockey, while it looks like the Devils forward group may be a little bit deeper and a little bit more potent at the current moment. And their defensemen overall, maybe the high end isn't better, but overall throughout the defensive core, they match up better. It's hard to say. Well, you pretty much have Fox and Hamilton in similar roles, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I would disagree in the fact I think the Devils have a better defense, period. As a team, our hated rivals do a good job, but the Devils are one of the best 5-on-5 teams offensively and defensively for a reason. A big weakness of our hated rivals is that once you get past Fox, once you get past Condrey Miller, Ryan Lindgren, if he's having a good time, You're dealing with Jacob Trouba, who honestly isn't that bad, but he's horribly overpaid. And once, and if he feels like he has to do everything himself and throw some elbows, you know that Trouba is not going to have a good time. So, and then guys like Braden Schneider, Nico Mikola, and Ben Harper, those guys have been picked on all season, like for a reason. There's a reason why you don't see Libor Hajek and Zach Jones on this roster for New York, because they've tried that with them. And instead, that's why they went out and got Nico Mikola, in a sense, because they knew that their defensive depth was weak. And guess what? It still kind of is. It's basically Fox and Miller and Lindgren, you know, ice up, boys. You're going to be working a lot this this series. So is Trouba. I think the Devils absolutely have an edge in that sense, because Hamilton and Fox in a sense cancel each other out, but Severson, even Brendan Smith, even Kevin Ball as your depth defensemen are just superior to whatever the Rangers could put out there. And you know, Marino and Graves have been pretty solid now that Graves is out of his slump, so to speak. He's not conceding terrible plays every other night. I think the Devils' defense, you know, blue line to blue line, the Devils have the edge there. The forwards, I think the depth thing is the big difference here. Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider, they could ruin anybody's night. Panarin and Zibanejad in particular are all situation scoring machines. The big difference,
I'm 0% worried about the kid line, by the way.
Well,
0%.
Well, again, the big ads for our hated rivals were Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko. And if they can show their previous form, then yeah, that's a big problem for not only the Devils, but anybody in the league for that matter. The difference is that Patrick Kane is effectively 2012 Peter Sikora. If you remember that, Dan, Peter Sikora in 2012 doesn't look so bad until you realize if he wasn't scoring, he wasn't helping. And that's Patrick Kane in a nutshell. If he's not scoring, he ain't helping. And Tarasenko, I think, is a little more responsible and has been better. But it's kind of a similar story there, too. So if the Devils can, and this is why I know you said don't put a whole lot of stock in previous results, but I think that March 30th game is a good sign, not just because the Devils won, but it's a good sign of how the Devils can handle this lineup, because that lineup did have Tarasenko, it did have Kane, it did have Mikola, it did have
the closest to what we'll see on Tuesday.
Exactly. And while the result was 2-1, you know, Shesterkin gets beaten on two shots in the first period, he gets a post bailout bailing him out in the third period. You know, the Devils pretty much controlled the game for the most part, because the Rangers, our hated rivals, New York, whatever you want to call them, the reason why they're not such a great 5-on-5 team is because they don't create as much offense as they do, partially because they're scoring goals and partially because if they're not winning the neutral zone, if they're not able to get set up, they are a mess. Their defense is not nearly as adept to get them out of the situations for counterattacks unless the other team makes a mistake. So as long as the Devils don't overplay over aggressive, if they can win that neutral zone battle, you know, the Devils can just keep doing what they've been doing to New York and keep telling Gerard Gallant, you figure out how to stop this because we ain't going to stop. And, you know, the Devils, provided they don't take a boatload of stupid penalties, they'll probably be fine, because that's actually the one thing that our hated rivals is also has a big advantage in. The Rangers have one of the better power plays in the entire league, and giving Zibanejad, Panarin, Tarasenko, Kane, Kreider, Vincent Trocheck, all that additional time and space is just asking for punishment. So as long as the Devils can keep it easy, keep it breezy, keep it beautiful cover girl, keep it at 5-on-5, I think they'll be fine in that sense.
Yeah, and let's talk about the fan factor too. Something has happened where it seems like group sales have gone to groups of Ranger fans. And again, it's a business after all, but it does feel like there will be an invasion of the people in blue in both areas, obviously, but I don't know. I think a lot of this is being overblown.
Some of it is. Now, to be fair, ticket sales for the playoffs started opening up to black and red members this past Monday, I should say. And so you had to either be a season ticket holder or a plan holder to get that early access. It's not a secret, Dan, that every sports franchise has this issue where people will buy season tickets and effectively just go sell them on a secondary market, whether that's StubHub, SeatGeek, TickIQ, Ticketmaster's own platform, whatever. They're basically, for lack of a better term, investing in the seat. So you'll have people who are nowhere near New Jersey, or even in New Jersey for that matter, who just buy the tickets and then proceed to resell them. Because according to Ticket IQ, you know, the secondary market average list price by team, the Devils have the third highest at $668. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers lead it with $1,329.
Crazy.
like there are people who are literally out there just scalping immediately. And the sad thing is, Dan, is that because these are the average prices, they think they can get these types of payments, and they probably are. And it's sad because it's not like the Devils or our hated rivals are making any money off of this. It's really those middlemen and middle women and middle whatevers, you know, taking a big cut of this. So, and it sucks because, as you just said, you know, the person who wants to just go to the hockey game, they're just looking at this price going, I don't think I need to take out a personal loan to go to a hockey game, mm-hmm. even if it is a playoff appearance for the first time in 5 years. So it's sad, but as you said, you know, there's not really a whole lot the business can do other than don't charge so damn much for hockey tickets. But even then, you know, I get it from their perspective. It's a rivalry series. These games are always priced higher than the other games the Devils play in the regular season. So it stands to reason that they'll do so in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I will agree that the fan effect is overblown. I mean, the Rangers fans love to brag that they own the Prudential Center. Steven Valiquette claims it's basically a home game.
Well, congratulations. And you own it so much, you lost there twice this year. Like
exactly. Like, that's my point, is that if fan support was all that meaningful, Montreal would be a championship contender every season. The harsh reality is it's not that big of a factor. Fan yeah. support in any sport, whether it's soccer, whether it's football, whether it's hockey, it's great. It's great to sell the concept, but it doesn't put points on the board.
Well, it's also a matter of the Devils being the best road team in the NHL all year. Like, I don't know that they care.
Exactly. Like, if there's a Devils team that isn't going to care whether or not the fans like him or not, it's this one. Because, you know, they've won in a lot of places where it's not that easy to win at. And
I'm obviously, like, not in the locker room with them, but compared to past years, this definitely feels like the most connected they've been. And it's not just because they're winning. It just feels like they talk about it more than ever before. It feels like they're very much acknowledging the presence that, you know, the veterans have brought. I mean, to Fitzgerald's credit, his goal was to bring veteran presence and depth, and he did that. Tatar, Halla have been just as important as a lot of other people on this team. And I don't know, something feels different compared to past seasons, or they wouldn't have had the resilience that they needed to make a lot of the comebacks they did. So a lot of the good vibes are not, you know, yeah, the fans bring a lot of them. They like playing for the fans. They wouldn't do the sport if they didn't. But I think there is a matter of, we are really understanding that we're in this for each other, and it doesn't really matter what's going on outside.
Exactly. And that's the biggest lesson. If I were in the locker room, that means something terrible happened, because I don't know why I'm in the locker room. But if I'm in the locker room, Dan, mm-hmm. my main thesis, my main point that I would want to express to all the players is to remind them that, yes, it's the playoffs. Yes, the games are all important. It's still a 60-minute game. It's still three periods. It's still, you know, two blue lines and a red line. It's an opponent you've played four times already, and you beat them three times, and you beat them 3 weeks ago. It's yeah. don't, you know, the playoffs are put on a pedestal for an important reason. I get it. They should be. But here's the point. My major point, Dan, is it's not so different that you're going to be completely blindsided.
Yeah.
If you just remember, it's a hockey game. You've all played important hockey games before. Do your job. Follow the coach's plan. Pay attention to details. Don't get caught puck watching. Don't take stupid penalties. You're going to be great. You've been doing it all season.
Yeah, I mean, the play your game. It's still hockey. At the end of the day, playoff hockey, while it does have an air of difference, still playing the same sport. Whatever exactly. made you successful, keep it up. And if you have to adjust, you will. But congratulations to the Devils for accomplishing their initial goals for this season. The expectations have certainly changed, but let's not forget that they came into the season wanting to play relevant games in the spring, and they did above and beyond that task. It just proved that they deserve more expectations. They've earned the right to be, you know, more They earn the right to be more watched by the national audience. They've earned the right to be more respected by the national audience. They have garnered that themselves, and it makes me happy to say that. But now is where I would say the real fun begins. It kind of does feel like they're playing with house money, but if it was anyone against the Rangers, I'd be like, yeah, fine, like whatever. They made the playoffs, like they'll be back next year, so on. They're only getting better. Let's beat this team. Let's beat these guys. Let's start there. Because you're going to have to, like, all the people who are saying, oh, if they only won the division, whatever, they played the Panthers, like, it's the playoffs. There are no easy teams. There are no easy outs anymore, especially in this year's Eastern Conference. The wild card teams involve a team that has made the conference finals twice in the last 5 years in the Islanders. And they also involve a team that won the President's Trophy as recently as last year. Completely changed their lineup and their coaching and still made the playoffs. That's dangerous. That is dangerous. And so, again, there are no easy outs in the Eastern Conference whatsoever.
Exactly. And as a final point, just to put a bow on it for the Devils, you know, I still like the Devils' chances. I think that's the other factor. I think a lot of people are overreading this concept of, oh, they're not experienced. Look, you got to get your experience somehow. You might as well do it while trying to win some games. Like, you know, and beating your hated rivals would put a total feather on this victory cap of a season. And it would really, you know, push people forward. Because as much as, you know, the regular season is an undeniable success, and I will be very unhappy with anybody who wants to tell me the season's a failure in any way or form, because it simply isn't. But, you know, beating the Rangers would absolutely cement this season as one of the greatest campaigns in the franchise's history, including the three Stanley Cup wins. I'm not saying it's better than those three for obvious reasons, but it's up there. Like, it's in the top 10, maybe the top seven. I could be argued top five, but I'm going to bristle with you a little bit. The point is that that's how incredible this season has been, but don't stop. Just keep doing it. And you know, aim for the stars. You might reach the moon. And that's going to be fantastic. So go out there, do the things, make the people who matter happy, and send our hated rivals home golfing in May, as they should be. Which reminds me, as an actual final Devil, New Jersey Devil fact point that I want to bring up, the schedule has finally been announced, because our hated rivals had to sort out MSG's availability between the Knicks and a Billy Joel concert. But we finally got a full schedule late last night. Game one will be on Tuesday, April 18th at The Rock. If you're not in the local broadcast area, it will be on TBS. Same for game two, which is on April 20th, which is as a 7:30 start. Again, local broadcast and nationally on TBS. Game three is going to be at MSG. It'll be on ABC at 8 p.m. So that won't be locally broadcast. It will be on ESPN Plus because it is an ABC broadcast. Game four is Monday, April 24th on ESPN. Game five, if necessary, will be on Thursday, the 27th. Game six will be at MSG on, if needed, on April 29th, which is a Saturday. And then game seven, if it's needed, and I hope it's not needed, because it means we're all going to be stressed out and filled with anxiety and concern, is going to be Monday night at The Rock on May 1st. So good schedule, favorable schedule, no back-to-backs, which I'm sure the temptation was there considering the two teams are that close to each other. There'll be at least one day break between games, which will be more than enough time for the players and the fans to recover from each outing. Expect a close series, Dan. Expect an anxiety one. But Dan, I'm going to be bold, and I think the Devils will take it in five games. What say you?
Wow. Devils in five is very bold. We're on a Devils podcast, so I think my real prediction has no place here. So I'm going to say Devils in six instead. They're going to take it at MSG. Okay. That's where I'll keep it there.
Okay. As another final point, I do want to send out a bit of congratulations to the Utica Comets.
Ooh.
Because the Utica Comets have been on the cusp of making the playoffs. Their season has not been nearly as good as it was for last season. Not having Fabian Zetterlund, not having Chase DeLeo, the team has scored like 40 fewer goals than they did the previous season while giving up just like 10 more. But they've been on the cusp. They needed a point. They needed a point. They needed one point. They finally got that one point with a 2-1 victory over Cleveland last night, with the game-winning goal coming from Simon Nemitz. That's right. The other stud of a prospect in the prospect pool. Yeah. Gets the W, sends Utica into the postseason. They're going to play their final regular season game in Syracuse. I believe that's this. Yeah, Saturday. So that's today. That's tonight. So Utica just gets in on their penultimate game of the season. I believe they're going to be playing Laval in the first round. Like, the AHL's playoff system is a very odd one because they have uneven divisions and everything. But the point is, they're in. Let's see what they can do. Let's see if Holt can get healthy enough from his illness so he can actually play in these games.
Hey, winning through the organization breeds good habits. So, and any it pauses does. For Utica or pauses for New Jersey.
Absolutely. So there you go. That's all I got, Dan. Do you have anything else?
No, I've got nothing else except an overwhelming urge to just fast forward to Tuesday for when the game starts. So we'll leave you on that note. And as always, let's go Devils and take down the hated rivals. Let's do it.
Burn them. Burn our hated rivals.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.